The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. To find out more about this talk show or other talk shows broadcasting on KUCI, log on to our website at kuci.org or check out the latest program guide.
Good morning and welcome to this January 7th, 2015 edition of Writers on Writing. This is our first show of the new year. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're broadcasting to you live from the University of California campus in Irvine. We're streaming on the web at kuci.org, and we're always available via podcast. I'm your host for this hour, Marie Stone. It's my pleasure to welcome literary agent Jane Distel to the show this morning. She'll be joining me for the entire hour, so we're lucky to have her. Jane is the president of Distel and Goderich Literary Management, a maverick agency with a stellar reputation and an eclectic client mix. Jane has been an agent since 1986 after a successful career as an editor and later as a publisher, directing all book and magazine publishing for a large newspaper syndicate. DGLM, founded in 1994, is a product of her innovative vision of author representation as a full-service enterprise. Involvement in every stage of the process, from the inception of an idea to selling a completed proposal or manuscript and beyond. With a growing staff of both established and young agents, Jane and the rest of the DGLM team take pride in cultivating and curating a formidable list of clients, authors, both literary and commercial fiction, adult and children's literature, as well as narrative and practical nonfiction. The agency represents numerous Pulitzer Prize winners and an acclaimed best-selling novelist. Jane grew up in Rye, New York, the daughter of publishing legend Oscar Distel. Jane, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, thanks for coming on. What a treat. What a great way to start our new year talking to you. So tell us a little bit about your path into becoming an agent, how you made that transition into it, and from the publishing side, and you know, your passion for agenting.
Well, I spent a number of years on the publishing side, as you say, both. I started out as your typical editorial assistant and became a managing editor of a publishing company. Ultimately, I became a senior editor of a publishing company, and then moved over to direct all book and magazine publishing for a very large newspaper syndicate, where I really learned a great deal about the entire process. I knew a lot about it before, but I learned most when I was with the syndicate, because I had more responsibility. I did a lot of traveling, and I had to solve a lot of problems. Yeah. But after a certain amount of time, I really felt that my strength was in selling, and so that's what I have been doing for the last many years. One of the things that happened when I was a publisher was that I found myself moving farther and farther away from the writers. And that's really what I love about this business, working with writers and helping them with their careers. And the longer I was a publisher, the more involved I was with the business of publishing and the less involved I was with the actual writers. And I didn't like that at all. Yeah. So ultimately I decided that I would kind of financially take a step back to learn how to be an agent, which I had to do, after being on the other side for a whole bunch of years. And I did that, and I paid my dues, I think. And now I've had a wonderful career as an agent.
So tell me a little bit about what you think, now that you're on the other side, it takes to make an effective agent. When you're hiring, looking for other agents, what are you looking for in them?
Well, I'm looking for somebody, first of all, with a great deal of energy. That's very important. You really can't ever give up in this business. And agenting can be very discouraging. We send out proposals. We go to a number of publishers with each different proposal simultaneously, and they come back. And I remember in the beginning, I took these rejections very personally. Remember, I had been a publisher, so I was on the buying side. I wasn't used to being rejected. So I look for energy. I look for perseverance and resilience. And that's kind of hard to see, but after all these years, I've got kind of an idea. I want somebody who's got integrity, very, very important, who has very strong social skills, that's also very important, who has good taste, who reads a lot, and who's willing to work very hard, because as an agent, you have to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it strikes me that to comb through the number of manuscripts that I know you must get, and to have an eye for what the market wants, not necessarily what you like, but what the market is looking for, is a very particular skill of what will sell.
You just have to be aware of what's going on all the time. And you're right. You know, there are many, there are books that I wouldn't read personally, but I know will sell. And so I take them on. I mean, it just is, it's part of what I do. But when I go to lunch with editors or when I'm speaking with an editor, I'm asking them what they're looking for so that when I read the material that comes to me from my clients, I know how to react.
Yeah. So what do the editors say? What are they looking for?
Well, today, editors are always looking for very, very strong commercial fiction, interesting and fresh narrative nonfiction. Science is a big category these days, I think.
Yeah.
Thrillers seem to be coming back a little bit. Horror seems to be coming back a little bit.
Mm.
I think there's too much memoir out there. I think that's an overpublished area, and I'm kind of staying away from that for the time being.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny how things come into fashion and then the market sort of gets saturated by it, and then, it goes cold. And you're right, memoir seems to have flooded the market for the last several years, and reality TV. I don't know how much television influences the publishing industry, but, with all of these reality TV shows, people seemed interested in people's real life stories, which then seem to fuel the, I don't know if it's the tail wagging the dog or if they have no correlation at all, but.
I don't either. I mean, I really don't. I do know that memoir as a category has been around forever. But all of a sudden, everybody was writing one. And my colleagues on the publishing side just started saying, stop, I don't want to do another one of these. It's very hard to write an Eat, Pray, Love. So, there was a lot of not very good books being published just because editors were buying these books because they wanted to buy a memoir.
Right, right.
The same goes for something like in the Victionary for books on vampires. And the paranormal in general. I mean, after Twilight, it was like craziness. And then all of a sudden, it just the bottom dropped out, and nobody would touch a book that had a vampire in it. Now, slowly, that seems to be turning around.
That's how I wondered if television was driving the book sales, because you've got all these, Walking Dead and zombie shows that are so prolific on TV. And then you wonder if people just have an endless appetite for vampires and zombies and, the paranormal, as you say.
I think it's the chicken and the egg.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what drives what. You have the book, The Hunger Games, and then you have 4 million dystopian things. Where did it begin? I mean, Twilight actually, came from a book. So it's, But they certainly have a symbiotic relationship. There's no question about that.
Right, right. You are listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. My guest this morning is Jane Distel. She's an agent coming to us from the Distel and Goderich Literary Management Company. I hope I'm saying that right. But your website is fantastic. It's a blog. It's got a ton of information, interviews, dglm.com. You can go and check more out about Jane. So aside from, let's step back and talk about what writers should be looking for when they're looking for an agent. So aside from looking for agents who represent your genre and your type of work, what should prospective clients be looking for in an agent?
I'll respond to that in a minute, but the website is dystel.com.
Oh, God. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
That's
very
okay.
Important. Very important.
dystel.com. Can you repeat the question?
Yes,
I'm awfully sorry.
No, that was an important piece of information to drop because I don't know how I got there. Okay, so aside from looking for agents who represent your genre, your type of work, what should prospective clients of yours be looking for in an agent? What are the important qualities that the clients
That's an important question. First of all, the agent-author relationship is one that's going to, you know, it's sort of like a marriage. It's going to last at least 2 years, if not longer. The whole intent is that it be a long-term relationship. So therefore, you've got to be able to communicate with your agent. You can't be intimidated by him or her. You can't. You've got to look for somebody you trust. There aren't many agents who are dishonest, but there are some. And so you really have to feel that you trust them. There's an organization called the Association of Authors Representatives, and agents who are members of that organization are usually people in good standing. You want somebody who's ethical. You want somebody who communicates well. You want somebody who's well thought of in the publishing community. You can find a lot of this out by looking in books that fall into your category, finding names of agents, and checking them out. You can check them out with the AAR. You can look at various websites to see who's well thought of and who isn't. And if you have friends who have written books or friends of friends, that's a very good way to go about it as well. Mm-hmm. But communication and trust are really of paramount importance.
And it doesn't matter if the agent is, you know, if I'm in LA and my agent is in New York where we're not meeting face to face, you shouldn't be intimidated by geographic distance, I wouldn't think.
Absolutely not. I do still at this point in time have a number of authors I've never met.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. My guest this morning is Jane Distel. She is joining me from New York from her literary agency. Talk a little bit about, let's get into the query letter and how people should approach you. What do you look for in your query letters? I assume they're now mostly sent all by email. But talk a little bit about how important the query letter is, what you're looking for, kind of do's and don'ts.
Well, one of the things I'm looking for is good writing. And if the query letter is sloppy and the writing is subpar, then I'm probably going to pass. I'm interested in a client, potential client, clearly defining what their idea is. I'm interested in them being credentialed to write that idea, and that they have a platform. Obviously, if you're writing first fiction, then I'm interested in the idea primarily because you know your credentials are less important. Although platform is always important. If you have a significant social media presence, that's going to be a leg up for anybody. It just is in this day and age. You have to write a succinct letter. I don't want to see anything, a cover letter that is more than a page long. You have to be able to describe your idea very clearly and concisely.
And you're including a chapter or something from your manuscript?
You can do that or not. I mean, usually what the agent who might or might not be interested will ask, if the agent's interested, they're going to ask for a chapter, they're going to ask for three chapters, they're going to ask for the manuscript. We generally ask for the manuscript.
Yeah.
But sometimes authors do send along chapters or manuscripts. If they send along a chapter, I usually ask for the manuscript. This is only incidentally with fiction. With nonfiction, I will ask for a proposal.
Right.
And certainly with a query letter, if somebody wants to enclose or attach a proposal, that's fine. It's not going to be in the format it ultimately is submitted in, but it will give me a very good idea of their writing skills, of their ability to define what they're going to be doing going forward.
Yeah. So in terms of platform, are you looking for people who tweet and who have Facebook presence, or are you looking for a proliferation of published essays, or I suppose both is ideal, but is there one?
The platform is mostly, you know, having a whole bunch of followers, on friends on Facebook, you know, people on Twitter, you know, people, if you have a blog, and you don't have to have a blog, but if you do, you should have a large number of hits. That's if you, and there are still some people who do this, go around the country and speak. That certainly contributes to your platform. If you teach, that contributes to your platform. And then there are, of course, credentials.
Yep, yep. Should writers compare themselves to other writers in their query letters so that you have a basis of, you know, this, you know, I'm a John Grisham, you know, meets whoever, or does that come across as sort of bragging?
It doesn't come across as bragging. Sometimes it comes across as ignorance.
Right.
You know, they can, I mean, that'll give me a very clear picture of how they see themselves. I will always make my own judgment. And we incidentally here read all of our query letters. We all do that because you never know. There are many agencies who don't. I mean, it's a time-consuming thing to do. But the serendipity of discovery is too attractive not to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you how rare it is because you, your agency, you know, you say that you read the manuscripts, and I feel like that has to be somewhat rare for the number that you must receive.
I don't, you know, I've only worked for myself and, you know, my agency when I began, but so I can't speak to other agencies. You know, we just, the needle in the haystack is what we're after.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you, when you're reading first, let's talk about fiction here because that's its own kind of animal. And when you're reading the first chapters, are you looking more for tone or voice, or are you looking for a zippy plot, or are you looking for characters that draw you in? I assume all of the above, but is there?
I'm looking for all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to read more after the first 20 pages. And if I don't, I'm going to put it down.
Yep, yep. I was looking at your blog yesterday, and they asked each agent in your agency, I wish I saw more blank. And you answered, I wish I saw more commercial women's fiction. And so tell us a little bit about what you're looking for. Does that mean chick lit? Does that mean something else? And what kind of commercial women's fiction is getting you excited these days?
Well, I mean, somebody like Laura Hildebrand, for example, I mean, I want... chick lit, sure. I mean, you know, although chick lit as a category isn't selling anymore, but there's something that is in that category that's not called chick lit that is selling, and I represent quite a bit of it. But I sort of am looking for something for a bit of an older market. I think that women of a certain age like to read a lot, but there isn't a lot for them to read. So Ann River Siddons, for example, is an example of commercial women's fiction. Even Susan Isaacs. Those are the kinds of people that I'm looking for. I also, of course, love great character development, and you know, our client Mary Doria Russell is one of the top novelists in the country. She is, of course, an author of literary fiction.
Yeah. My guest this morning is Jane Distel. She is joining me from the Distel & Goderich Literary Management Company in New York. You can find them at dystel.com, right?
Right.
Which is a website that has an amazing amount of information. Even if their agency is not right for you or you're represented by somebody else, it's got an extensive blog with a lot of great information, great interviews, great sites that they follow. Wonderful advice. I saw that you guys have an internal book club amongst you, which I thought was a great idea, so that you're all reading across genres and reading books that you otherwise wouldn't normally read. Have surprising things come out of that for you that you wouldn't normally read, and books that you fell in love with that would have been outside your own personal genres?
Well, yes, I think so. And we've learned, I mean, we've been doing this now for 18 or 19 years. We've learned an enormous amount from the book club. I've learned an enormous amount because when I became an agent, I didn't know a lot about fiction. Everything I've learned about fiction, well, I've learned from other things, but it's from the books that I've read that I would not normally read. I've learned what I like. I've learned what I don't like. You know, there are things that we talk about in terms of, well, even though we don't like it, why did it work? Those kinds of things. So it's terrific to have the book club because it really, especially for me, because I work so hard, because it forces me to read out of my work.
Right. Right, which is a recommendation that most authors who come on this show tell us you should be reading outside of your own genre. It's just good practice, right?
The more you read, the better you write.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. I don't mean for this to be a discouraging question, but obviously resilience and stick-to-itiveness are imperative for writers. When do you know how, if you have queried, you know, 150 agents and it's just not happening for you, is there sort of a number where you should give pause to say, you know, my manuscript just isn't ready to go out yet? Or, you know, we always hear these persevering stories. I didn't get a yes until, you know, my 50th agent. But is there a number in which you should be aiming to query before you pull the manuscript back and give it a second look?
I don't think so. I mean, what you might want to do is you might want to go to 40 or 50 agents, and that's high. I certainly wouldn't stop if you're really passionate before then. But then, you know, if everyone is saying no, and you also have to, of course, look at why they're saying no, you might want to put it aside and start something new. I wouldn't stop writing at all. But, you know, once you have a book published and that book does reasonably well, you're going to have more books and you can go back to the one that you had queried the 40 or 50 agents on.
Yeah. I had heard that it's the second book that's the tough seller, that you can get your first book published relatively easily, and then your career is sort of made or broken on the second book. Is that a myth?
Well, there are two factors here. First of all, it's not relatively easy to sell anything these days. But if you have a novel, and let's talk about that, although this is also true with nonfiction, but more true with fiction, and it sells moderately well, you sell it, the agent or the author sells it nicely, and the book does not perform, it's going to be very, very difficult to sell the next book. So that's one factor. If the publisher overpays for the first book and the sales are low, that's going to be a problem as well. The other thing that happens is the sophomore slump, which is the second part of this, where novelists do have trouble with second books, just in terms of creating them. I'm not sure why that is, but it does happen. So, and, you know, it also happens in the world of nonfiction. If you perform in the case of this is true of both nonfiction and fiction. You know, if you perform well and your second book is bought, and then you turn in a dud, that's a problem too.
Yeah. How are we defining performing? How well do you have to sell to be considered performing well?
Well, it's nice if you can earn out your advance in sales. Now, of course, having said that, if the advance is very high and you don't earn it out, but you sell a significant number of copies, that's good. I mean, you might not get quite as high an advance the next time, but you probably, if the work is good, will continue to be published.
Yeah.
But, you know, the threshold is different depending upon what we're talking about.
Right, right. Let's talk a little bit about hybrids like literary suspense or, you know, contemporary historicals, the things that fall into a couple of different genres. Are those still hot? And, you know, do their straddling genres help or hurt them?
Those are difficult. I do not encourage anybody to do that because ultimately, and this shouldn't be, but it is, ultimately the market is governed by the buyer, and the buyer is the bookstore, the, you know, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. And they like to categorize. They love that.
Right.
So if they can't do that, they're going to pass.
They throw it on a table in the middle of the store and make you figure out what it is.
You do not want that to happen.
Right. Right. My guest this morning is Jane Distel. She is an agent and president at Distel and Goderich Literary Management Company in New York. How has the industry changed since when you look back over the entirety of your career and trends and, you know, trying to anticipate what's coming up based on all of these wonderful decades of experience, how has it changed and where do you see it going, particularly with the proliferation of, I mean, we can get into ebooks and self-publishing in a minute, but talk a little bit about, you know, where we've been and where you think we're going.
Well, you know, when I came into the business, there were a whole lot of publishing companies, and that's not true anymore. There's been an enormous amount of consolidation, just like Pac-Man buying. I mean, it's really quite amazing how the little companies were bought by the big companies. And, you know, a couple of years ago, one of the big companies was sold to one of the bigger companies. So the consolidation has made a great deal of difference in terms of who we can sell to, because we can't go. A company cannot bid against itself. Also, what's happened as a result of the consolidation is that editors have been fired, lots of them. But there are, on the other side of that, there are more very, very effective freelancers out there. The number of books that are published every year have diminished. There's no question about that. Every once in a while, they'll creep up a little bit, and then they'll go back. Overhead is down. Expenses are down. The life in the publishing industry used to be very kind of romantic and fun. I mean, it was never a business where you could make a fortune, but you certainly could be involved in in fun things, big expense accounts, all of that. That's no longer true. This is a business now. When I came into it, it was a lot less of a business.
How sad. Yeah, but I can see that. It's like the airline industry and flight attendants. They used to be so glamorous, and now they just look like they're doing a job. And that seems to be true of a lot of industries now, which is unfortunate.
I represented a book that was published a couple of years ago called Hot House. It's by a guy named Boris Kachka, K-A-C-H-K-A. And that really covers book publishing, you know, sort of beginning after the Second World War, and what it was like, and I was really surprised when I read some of that stuff because I didn't know it either, but it was quite a glamorous period, and still had some glamour when I came into it, but quickly lost it.
Right. Can you discern that? I know that you represent or you take on, you know, something like, I hate to say this number out loud because it sounds discouraging and it probably shouldn't be, but you take on like 1% of the people who query you. And amongst those people, which is still a long, long, long client list as I'm looking through your website, a lot of people, are there commonalities that your authors share that you're looking for? This is kind of a weird question. As I'm halfway into it, I'm thinking this is kind of a weird question. But are there traits and commonalities that you think make authors successful?
You know, they have to be good writers. They have to be able to tell good stories. It's nice when they're nice people, but not all of them are. It's good when they're good communicators, but not all of them are. So the commonality is the writing. That's the commonality. It's got to be there in order for them to achieve what they want to achieve by doing this.
Yeah, yeah. And I assume, you know, writing is one of those lovely things where age probably isn't a barrier where it is to so many other industries. And in fact, life experience probably helps you out in some ways. So I see a lot of people get into this in older age, you know, more advanced ages of life and still have some success. I don't know if that's true or if that's just a couple of anecdotes that I've heard. But
It's definitely true. It's definitely true. There's nothing to stop somebody who's older who can tell a good story well from, you know, being successful if they persevere.
Right, right. So let's get into self-publishing and whether self-publishing, when people should consider it, if it's a taboo thing to do, and if you're self-published, if that puts a taint on your name to make it more difficult for you to enter traditional publishing after that.
Well, it used to be that self-publishing certainly had a negative definition. I don't believe that's true anymore. There are many, many people, some of whom are my clients, who were self-published and made millions of dollars doing it. If you self-publish and you have high sales, then you are going to be successful either by continuing to self-publish or by approaching a traditional publisher. So I don't believe that self-publishing has a negative connotation anymore. There are old-timers who still do, though. They refuse to do it. We have a digital division here where we help people, and I'll tell you the categories of people in a moment, to self-publish their books. We do not publish for them. We're not publishers, but we help them to self-publish. And the people we help are people who come to us with an idea that we don't think we can sell, but we think, given the subject matter of the book and the social media of the author, can do well online. And if it does do well, then the next book is going to be very easy to sell to a traditional publisher. The other category that we help along are those people whose books, mostly fiction, we tried to sell, And where we failed, but we still think that it will do well, self-published. There are also those books that have gone out of print and the author has gotten the rights back. There's no reason to just forget the book. For certain categories and for certain authors, the book can have a new life.
Right, right. What are the categories when you're looking at what would naturally be a good candidate for a self-published book? What are the qualities that you think would naturally lend itself better to that as opposed to traditional publishing?
Well, category fiction, for one. I mean, thrillers, romance, science fiction. Those are all categories that would work in the self-published area, as long as the author has a strong social media platform. In the nonfiction area, the category that stands out is true crime.
I'm sorry, is what?
True crime.
Oh, yeah, okay. Let's also talk about resetting. I think, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, some of the sexiness and, expense accounts and all of that have gone out of agenting and publishing. And I think we should probably reset writers' expectations of what agents and publishers will now do for them and what they won't. I know a few people that are in the process of publishing their books, and they're not getting as much marketing support or book tours or things that they thought they might have 10 or 15 years ago. And it's worth talking about what their expectations should be now in terms of what their agents will do for them and what their publishers will do for them and what they should be expecting to do for themselves.
Right. Well, in terms of support, I mean, this agency does everything we can. But when it comes to what's going to happen on the publishing side, all we can do is we can advise them on how to build their social media. We can give them the names of publicists, and I don't generally recommend they hire publicists. I'll tell you why in a minute. I can tell them the questions to ask their publisher, but generally speaking, the support you get on the publishing side is minimal until that book takes off. There are no more author tours. Very, very few people go on an author tour. And, in fact, author tours are not very efficient. Sure, national television can pay off, but that's about it. So to spend a lot of money traveling around the country to have a newspaper interview, to have one radio interview, to do a local television show makes very little. Go to a bookstore signing. Bookstore signings don't really work anymore either. So the author should not expect these things to be what they concentrate on. They should really be building their social media platform themselves, and anything the publisher does for them, which is probably going to amount to sending out review copies and making suggestions for them to build their social media, is gravy.
Right, right. And you had mentioned hiring a publicist. Talk a little bit about that, if people should.
The reason why I don't recommend it is because what is the publicist really going to do for you? And how much are they going to charge to do it? I often find that that the charge is not enough to pay for the number of books, the amount of money that you're going to make in selling your book, so you'll be in the hole, and nothing much will get done, and you'll be very frustrated. So I'm not a believer. I mean, I'd love it, for the publisher's publicist to be good. I mean, that would be nice, because there are lots of fresh and new ideas out there. But unless your book is going to sell an awful lot of copies, it's really difficult to financially justify a publicist.
Right, right. My guest this morning is Jane Distel. She is the president and agent of the Distel and Goderich Literary Management Company in New York. You can find them online at dystel.com. And a wealth of information up there. I want to be respectful of your time. So the moment that you have tired of this, you just let me know. I could talk to you for hours, I'm sure. But before I do let you go, I did want to talk just a moment about ebooks, Kindles, and the way ebooks have changed, shaped, or made the industry better or worse in your mind.
Well, certainly there have been very big changes. There's no question about that. The major change, and I'm very excited about this, is that I believe that that e-books have increased reading, or digital publishing has increased reading, and I'm sure I'm right. And that's good news. That's good news for all of us. For a while, it certainly threw everything out of whack, because the book publishers, the traditional publishers, really didn't believe it was ever going to happen. And so they were way behind the eight ball in getting on the bandwagon. But that's all resolved, and it's all caught up now, and the growth of e-books has slowed down, if it hasn't stopped. And so print books and e-books are probably, where they're going to be. But for a while, it caused a lot of anguish among the traditional print publishing companies, because they weren't on the bandwagon. They didn't have the capacity to publish e-books. And in many cases, they didn't have the rights. And that might still be true.
Right, right. This is a question from, I should have asked it an hour ago. But when somebody sends a query letter to your office and is rejected by a particular agent, is that a rejection from the agency as a whole, or would you pass it on to somebody else in the agency that you feel would be a better representative of the book?
Well, it's a complicated question. If the author submits to an agent and the agent feels that it's not for them and they don't pass it on to a colleague before rejecting it, you can't come back.
Okay.
But if they, I always do. If I feel there's promise, I'm going to give it to one of my colleagues. Hopefully my colleagues do the same thing.
Right. And once a book has gone through extensive revision, if it's been rejected by you, I assume it's dead for that agency. And even
Pretty much. I mean, we'll look at it again, but we're unlikely to pick it up.
Right, right. As we draw down on our time, do you have general advice that we haven't given out to our lovely writing audience here that they should know when they're querying agents or anything about literary agencies that's very secret that you've never told anyone that you would like to? The secret key to getting an agent.
The secret, but I did do a blog that went up on Monday, and I think that every prospective author should read it. Frankly, she said humbly, it's about my favorite New Year's resolution. It's something that I learned from my dad and that I've practiced religiously for my life and my career. And it has to do with perseverance. You should never give up.
You know, it's funny because I had read that blog entry last night when I was going to ask the magic question of how many agents is too many agents to query before you have to, decide that maybe you should give up. But you shouldn't certainly give up on the endeavor of writing in general, obviously.
That's right.
Right, right. Jane Distel, this was a huge pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Marie. I very, very much enjoyed this experience.
Me too. That was Jane Distel. She is president and agent at the Distel and Goderich Literary Management Company. You can find them online at dystel.com. They do a wonderful blog. They share other of their favorite blogs that they follow. You can see all of the authors that they represent, the type of work that they represent. There's a wonderful frequently asked questions section on there that you as prospective writers can go to and figure out what you should be doing before you query an agent. There was also some really nice advice that I read up there yesterday about reading magazines, the importance of reading magazines, and to keep yourself up to date on sort of what the world is thinking about right now. And I thought it was a great way to jumpstart your own writing if you're looking for ideas on, you know, what's hot. Magazines are a great immediate, as well as newspapers, great immediate way to figure out what people are talking about, what people are thinking about, and kind of what the trends are. That's one of the resolutions that she made, was to keep up on her magazine reading to figure out which books to look for. That is all the time we have for today. I will be right back here with you next Wednesday morning with two more great authors. Maggie Shipstead will be here, as well as Lily King, author of Euphoria. They will both be on with me next week. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day. How do I?